Ladies and gentlemen, you've tuned in this station expecting to hear Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Tonight, their sponsor is the makers of Johnson's Wax, have given this time to your government. What you'll hear in the next 30 minutes is urgently important. It concerns you. We respectfully ask you to listen. And we also urge those of you in Canada to stay tuned in. The program concerns you, too.
This program is about you and time. Time and the war at home, where the fighter wears overalls and the factory whistle blows readily. The total war in which everyone is a soldier. It used to be men using weapons did the fighting. Now, machines using men are the fighters. The soldier without a gun is a dead soldier. The flyer without a plane is pinioned to earth. The sailor without a ship is a waterlogged corpse. This program is about our war at home, our job, making the gun and the plane and the ship the biggest job in the history of the world. For this year, the soldier needs 20,000 anti-aircraft guns and 45,000 tanks. The sailor, 8 million tons of ships. And the flyer, for him we must make in 1942, 60,000 planes. And in 1942, there are left only 289 days. This program is about you and time. And time is short. 289 days. 20,000 anti-aircraft guns, that's one every half hour. 45,000 tanks, one every 12 minutes, day and night. 60,000 planes, a plane every 8 minutes, day and night, every day including Sundays and holidays. Yes, time is short. And tonight there are factories and mills which are dark, shut down as usual when the 5 o'clock whistle blew. Won't be open until tomorrow morning at 7. Business as usual. Shut down at night as usual. 14 hours out of the 24. In those 14 lost hours, we could have produced
70 tanks.
98 planes.
70 more tanks might have held Singapore.
98 more planes might have held Java. An American soldier was shot and killed. The bullet through his heart, made in Japan a year ago. It was fired from a gun made in Germany in 1936. The tank that might have saved this American boy's life was made in America. Too late. Soldier without a gun is a dead soldier. But when Johnny gets his gun, his tank, his plane, the story's different and short.
Fire stop. Tank, tank.
In the Navy, the watches are four on and four off. You learn to live that way. 4 hours sleep at a time. Sundays, too. There's death grinning from the skies above and the waters beneath. There's no double time for holidays in the Philippines.
business as usual is out. Industry must go to war, too. 3 full shifts a day, 7 days a week. The machines working every minute. That's the goal of the production drive announced 2 weeks ago by Donald M. Nelson, chairman of the War Production Board.
Another government gag, I'll bet. How does it work? What'll it do? What is it?
Well, the production drive's as American as apple pie. It's the old booster spirit tied to the tail of a dive bomber. You know, the convention spirit, the football spirit, the community sing. It's Main Street and Broadway and Hollywood Boulevard learning new slogans. It's Yankee Doodle played on a 3-ton drop forge. We've been through drives before. You remember?
Be kind to animals, please.
Mother's Day.
Fire prevention.
Fire pop.
Michigan Cherry Week.
Father's Day.
Boy Scout Week.
Mobilization for human needs.
Wisconsin Cheese Week.
Yes, we've been through all this before. But the production drive is different.
Sure. We have a year to put it over.
We had a year. There are only 289 days left. Yes, 289 days. We can go over the top for cherries and cheese and plums. We can beat the quota for the new parish house and oversubscribe the new country club. Can we meet the quota in this drive? Can we beat the quota? Our future and the future of our children and their children after them will be determined in these next 289 days.
It's the toughest, hardest campaign the American people ever conducted. And we haven't got any choice. We can't let George do it. We've got to do it, or else.
The production drive means at least a 25% boost in output of all existing war plans. It means every critical machine in every factory in every city, town, and village working every hour of every day in every week. 3 full shifts. No time off for machines. Saturdays, Sundays, or holidays.
According to the schedule of the production drive, another plane should have been finished in the 8 minutes since this program began.
The production drive calls for teamwork, for joint committees of labor and management working in close cooperation to turn out a better job faster.
I've been thinking, Joe, if we turn the workbench around this way, I can hand the job on to you quicker. Put it right in your hands, so there'll be no time lost.
No time lost. No time to lose.
The production drive means posters in the plant and boxes where workers can stop and drop suggestions for improving the job. It means bringing the worker closer to his job by displaying pictures of the weapons in action.
Look at there, Mike. That's what I'm making for Uncle Sam. That's their 30-ton tank.
Yeah, biggest thing I ever saw you handle was a 2-inch shaft.
Oh, is that so? Well, that shaft's got to have a tolerance of 2/10,000ths of an inch, or the tank don't roll. And my shafts don't vary beyond 1/10,000.
The production drive makes the workman realize he is a fighter in overalls, a production soldier.
I'm proud to award this efficiency medal to the crew Top 4 for exceeding your week's quota by 200 units.
The production drive provides information to take home and show the family.
Which one, John?
Why, this one. This one right here, the twin motor jet.
Oh, gee, it's big. Junior, look at what Daddy made.
Well, I did have some help.
Gee, Pop, wait till I tell a kid. Can I take the pictures to school, Pop? Can I maybe ask
them? The production drive means scoreboards where a man can watch the progress of his work. Some of them are unexpectedly unusual. That's right. Come closer. Look hard. Here's one in bright yellows and reds here on an American plant wall. A huge picture of Hitler. So big and bright and loud that if it were music, it would sound like this. Why, Hitler? Well, as the guns come off the assembly line, one after the other, something happens to ugly Ed Alf up there. Somehow, he disappears. That's it. You've got it. Little by little, gun by gun, he's rubbed out. The production drive will bridge the long gap between the man behind the machine and the man behind the gun.
I've asked you men to meet here this lunch hour to hear a communique we just received from the front lines. I quote, "We are pleased to inform you that the tank battalion, which won such a brilliant victory in yesterday's fighting, consisted exclusively of medium tanks produced by your plant.
That's what the production drive is. Simple, American, Democrat.
But every one of us is a part of it, not just the plant manager and the worker.
Just imagine a team with 130 million players.
And the stands filled with the conquered peoples of the world, their feeble cheers croaking from the starved throats.
You're a member of that team, whether you drive a tank or a turret lathe, whether you buy a bond or do without that second teaspoon full of sugar.
Listen, please, to a pound of sugar. A pound of sugar made the alcohol that made the powder that fired those 46 bullets.
And here goes a lot of candy bars and ice cream. That took 325 pounds of sugar. See how it ties up? Of course, sugar and tires are just the beginning. We'll have to do without a lot more things to put the production drive over. And some of the things seem so unrelated to war, we Americans don't see the connection. You remember the story we all laughed at as far back as 6 years ago? It was a story out of Germany.
Stop me if you heard this one. It's about the little guy who worked in a baby carriage factory. Well, when his wife had a baby, he decided to make a baby carriage for the kids. Each day, he swiped a part from the factory, and each night, he brought it home. And when he had enough parts, he took them down the cellar to assemble the baby carriage. He worked all evening. In fact, he worked until way past midnight, but finally had to give up, and he tried to explain it to his wife this way.
I'm sorry, Emma, but I just can't make it work out. No matter how I put those baby carriage parts together, it comes out a machine gun.
We split our sides of that one 6 years ago. And now we're up against the hard reality of turning plowshares into swords. Conversion, we call it. Conversion of peacetime industry to wartime production. American ingenuity has already accomplished some pretty weird changeovers.
Freight cars into ships.
Motion picture projectors into aircraft precision tools.
Compacts into cartridge clips.
Cork products into wingtips.
Refrigerators into propellers.
Textile machinery into bomb fins.
Metal handbag frames into machine gun charges.
This is conversion, and this is a part of the production drive, a part that is affecting you and will continue to affect you more and more.
Is it worth it?
Mister, if you think you're making sacrifices, meet this Frenchman. He's a worker just like you.
Before this happened, I was a dye maker in the fur door works in France. Now, I am making tanks in a factory in Berlin. I work 18 hours a day under guard. They feed me, well, just enough to keep me going. My family, I do not know. I have not heard from them since the Nazis marched me. What else can I do? They don't even shoot me for slowing down. They talk to me.
Slave labor. Millions of slave workers like that one, working for Germany and Japan, turning out their guns and tanks and planes. It's an efficient system, too. Labor costs practically nothing, and fresh labor is available in every newly conquered country. Slave management, too, taking orders from the Gestapo. Lots of slave management available in the industry of each conquered nation.
Slave labor gets no wages. Slave management, no profit.
There's your competition. That's what free American enterprise is up against.
Cards are on the table. This is the showdown. The production drive is the final chance of American enterprise, of the American people.
If.
In the 12 minutes since this program started, a new tank should have rolled off the assembly line. This way around.
At the direction of President Roosevelt, Donald Nelson announced the production drive just 2 weeks ago. The response to it was instantaneous. And daily, the voluntary, enthusiastic pledges of cooperation continue to roll in.
From the Goodrich Local 194, United Rubber Workers of America.
We pledge full support to your plea to the American people to come to the aid of their country.
From the National Supply Company of Pittsburgh.
Immediately after your radio address, the National Supply Company began the planning of plant committees in line with your suggestions.
From the United Auto Workers, Local 719.
Assure full cooperation of 5,000 members for victory.
From the Peninsula Shipbuilders Association of Newport News, Virginia.
This organization will do its utmost in stepping up production through this proposed committee.
From the SWOC, Local 2551, American Car and Foundry Company, Buffalo.
Overjoyed with opportunity.
The list is long. It includes names that are household words like Studebaker, General Electric, Westinghouse, Packard, RCA, and Colt. And it includes less familiar names. The Greenfield Tap and Die, the International Machine Tool, the Ingersoll Steel and Ditch. It includes the United Cannery Packing and Allied Workers of America and Local 3 of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, CIO and AFL, the mighty industrial giants, and the humblest subcontracting machine shop. Management and labor alike are joining the production drive. We don't know whether that airplane and that tank, which should have been made since this program started, have been produced. Since everyone making war material may not yet have gotten behind the production drive.
Do you mean to tell me there's anyone who refuses to cooperate?
Perhaps. You see, this is a democracy. The government can only suggest. The production drive is entirely voluntary. It does not order labor or management to cooperate.
But can't they see that this is a matter of life or death for all of us?
Business as usual is not interested in all of us. Business as usual is interested only in itself.
But that's ridiculous.
Of course it is. It still is. Well, can you imagine this happening? Come here.
Where are you taking me?
You're inside a Navy dive bomber flying in formation against a Japanese objective in the South Pacific. Listen.
You're too close to number 7, Lieutenant. Pull her up a bit and over.
You mind your bonsai, chum. I'll fly the ship.
Okay, pal, but you're going to sideswipe number 7 just as sure as I'm sitting here scared to death.
So what if I do? I don't like the guy that's piloting number 7. See, never have. We went to school together, and he was a jerk there, and he's still a jerk. So I sideswipe him. So I crack him up. So what?
Wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, that couldn't happen.
But can you imagine the Navy taking personal grievances into battle or the Army? How about industry?
Well, that's just as absurd. We're at war now. We've got unity in this country.
Have we? Are you sure about that? Listen.
I'll get this, you guys. I got the lowdown, and I'm telling you what we're going to do. Local 721 ain't going to get hooked in the Management Labor Committee that your production drive's trying to put over. See? They can't make it stick. Why, it's the old speed-up. They'll work our tails off and no raise in pay, and then when the war is over, they got it where they want it. Why, it's fascist. That's what it is. This is a free country, see? And we don't have to team up with nobody we don't like. And there ain't nobody I don't like as much as those guys in the front office.
Yeah, you're right, too.
Sounds like sideswiping dive bomber number 7, doesn't it? Or take the other side.
Seriously, B.W., I don't like this production drive at all. Sounds like communist stuff to me. It's going to Sovietize American industry. It definitely gives labor an in on management. And you know how they are. Give them an inch, and where will we be when the emergency's over?
When the emergency's over? This is no piddling little emergency. They're killing people by the millions. They're stealing the earth by the continent. This is no emergency. This is catastrophe. Worldwide, inescapable catastrophe. And it won't be over for any of us, ever. Unless all of us get together now. So quit shoving, quit beefing, quit bickering, will you, boys?
I like America. I'd like to keep it. Wouldn't you?
Labor calling management fascist. Management calling labor communist. In the gravest moment of American history.
I don't get it. Where do such ideas come from?
Here's one source, the main source.
This is Berlin calling. The North American armament dictator, Donald Nelson, announced today in a message to the industrial workers of the United States the introduction of a special system of control in imitation of the Russian speed-up method. The United States is standing today before the greatest trial of her strength in her entire history and has to introduce a special control system in order to supervise the workers in every factory, just as with the Soviets.
Not many Americans bother to listen to the distorted and hysterical blabbing of the Berlin shortwave. They haven't the time these days. But the broadcasts come in clear and strong, and the Nazi agents hear them, and the synthesizers, and the psychologists. There are plenty of them still running around, creating suspicion, starting rumors, casting doubt. It's a technique made in Germany, divide and conquer. Any American with sense enough to come in out of the rain knows better than to fall for that type of thing. If we're up to schedule, another new plane is leaving the assembly line somewhere in America at this moment. If we're up to schedule.
How about it?
Let's ask the boss. He's standing by down in Washington. How about the schedule, Mr. Nelson? How's the production drive coming along? What's next, Mr. Nelson?
America today is producing weapons of war in large volume. I spent all yesterday afternoon at the Army Proving Ground. There I saw our new tanks and guns tested. I want you to know I was proud of those weapons. They're the best in the world, and we're making a lot of them. Since Pearl Harbor, plane production, for example, has gone up more than 50%. But this is no reason for false complacency. We're nowhere near our goals. We need more and forever more of these weapons, and we need them now. We have got to realize the value of time. Here is what time is worth. A machine gun factory in full swing can equip a whole regiment in a day and a half. 36 hours of work. That's why hours are important. Every minute counts. Yet some manufacturers have come to the War Production Board to plead just a few extra months before going into war production. Some of them want to delay over details. Some of them argue before awarding a subcontract. I know of a case where 26 days were wasted just this way. You and I will not stand for that. Then, too, I know of cases where workers in war plants have been told by other workers, by men in their own unions, to keep production down, to take it easy, not to hurry, to spread the job out and make the work last. You and I will not stand for that either. These cases are not typical. They're becoming fewer and fewer. In my opinion, they simply reflect the fact that a few people just haven't got it through their heads that this is a life and death matter. I pledge my word to the American people that I will fight such indifference or interference wherever I find it. The war production drive has been launched to bring us all together in one united, determined team, and to awaken every one of you to your importance in the war. During the next 2 weeks, there are a series of regional meetings to explain the war production drive to labor and management. After this meeting, its success is up to the men and women, labor and management in the plant. It is a voluntary effort. This plan provides for joint labor management committees in each plant to stimulate war production. It calls for greater plant efficiency. That means if anyone has a suggestion as to how we can do our job faster, smoother, and more efficiently, that suggestion must be passed along to where it will do the most good for our country and for free men and women everywhere. This drive is designed to increase the production of weapons now, and not to further the special interests of any group. It is not a plan to promote company unions. It is not a device to add to or tear down power or position of any existing union. It does not interfere with bargaining machinery where it exists. It does not put management in labor or labor in management. It is not a management plan, a labor plan, or any other plan. It is the war production plan. It is a perfectly simple, straightforward effort to increase production. I have said this before, and I am saying it again, for the simple reason that a few people still do not seem to understand it. I am glad to say that a great majority do understand it, and have accepted it in the spirit in which it was proposed. Frankly, I was both pleased and alarmed to hear that the Nazis are attacking our war production drive. They are afraid of it. They are afraid that this nation is buckling down to the production of more war equipment. They know that means ultimate defeat for them. That is why I was glad to know that the Nazis take this thing seriously. Very seriously. The reason I was alarmed is that I do not understand the Nazi mob. They will seize every opening. They will use every argument to try to spread doubt and confusion, discontent and mistrust. They're already working to convince American citizens that some other American citizen is putting over a sly trick. That there are mysterious and insidious forces at play here. That the whole thing is not what it appears to be. That the American people cannot trust their leaders or each other. Beware of the man who instills doubt in your mind. He may not be Hitler's agent, but he is doing that agent's work. Let me repeat once more. Groundless fears of a few people could bog down the whole effort. The enemy is clever at this sort of thing. He has done it successfully before. He knows that this is his crucial test. Unless he can divide this nation now, unless he can set one group against another, unless he can make us fear each other, unless he can lead us into the same pitfalls he prepared for the people of France and Norway and all the rest of them, unless he can do these things to our people, then he is licked. I say that Hitler cannot and will not split this a great American production team. I say that we will pull together, not apart.
That was Donald M. Nelson, chairman of the War Production Board, speaking to you from Washington, and leaving little for us to add here. Goodbye. These goals.
An anti-aircraft gun every half hour. A tank every 12 minutes. A minute. A plane every 8 minutes. Day and night. Day and night. 7 days a week. Sundays and holidays included until the end of 1942.
Since this program went on the air, 3 planes and 2 tanks should have been completed. If we're up to schedule. You know the answer, Mr. Manager. And you, Joe Worker. How about it?
You've just heard the War Production Board's report on the production drive. The dramatic portions of the program were written by Dorothea Lewis and William N. Rolfe. Tom Bennett composed the original musical score, which was conducted by Dr. Frank Black. The production was under the direction of Mr. Rolfe. The program you've just heard was made possible through the courtesy of the makers of Johnson Wax, who provided the time usually occupied by Fibber, McGee, and Molly, so that the American people might understand clearly the vital urgency of the production drive and to tell our friends in Canada what their ally to the South is doing. Next week at this time, Fibber, McGee, and Molly will be heard as usual. This program came to you from Washington and New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company. This is Chicago, WMAQ.